Hey everyone, welcome to my show, My So-Called Fabulous. I'm Tiffany. Welcome everyone. I am so excited to bring you yet another fabulous show on women's health and wellness. You know, last year in 2023 was a tough year for health for me. And, you know, I had the opportunity to turn things around. And I try to bring people on this show that make a difference, that absolutely make a difference, try to help solve problems, because we all don't have access to great health care. So I always say we have one body, and you need to take care of it. And I've brought this fabulous woman from Dallas in. Everyone meet Dr. Priya Patel with Feminology MD. Welcome Hello. To the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
You are beautiful and fabulous.
Thank you.
And
likewise.
Oh, thank you. And three beautiful children. Y'all, listen to this. You have a 3-month?
Yes, the youngest is 3 months.
We're rounding up a little bit.
Yeah.
3 months.
Yeah.
And
8-year-old, 3.5-year-old, and a 3-month-old.
You are a busy woman, and you started this other baby. You started another baby a year ago.
Yes.
You're an OB-GYN.
Mm-hmm.
You were working in a hospital, and you decided to make this switch into women. You're an OB-GYN, mm-hmm. obviously women's health. You made the decision to begin Feminology MD, and we're going to give everyone the show notes how to find you. But tell us, what was the light switch? It was time.
That's a hard question. I don't know that there was, you know, truly a light switch. It was just over the course, you know, I'd been in my previous practice for about 5 years. And over the course of that time, I loved delivering babies. I mean, I loved everything about my practice. And I think a lot of times impetus for change is dissatisfaction, right? If you're unhappy about something, that's your motivation to change.
Right.
But I really wasn't unhappy. I loved my practice. I loved my patients. But I just felt like over time, as I was, you know, really seeing the women's health piece of things, that I often myself found myself rushing patients out the door. I felt like, oh, I have to see people in 10 or 15 minutes because there was 15 more patients and you're trying to keep the office running on time and respect other people's time. And I just felt like I could do it better. And so it really started making me think about how could I create a model where I really could take care of patients for longer, spend that time with them, really discover what their goals were, and then figure out sort of the best possible way to help them achieve their goals.
Right. Because so many goals are different. We were talking earlier. We have four women in the studio today, different age, different needs, mm-hmm. and different goals. Exactly. Right. And with Feminology, do you see the women, myself, post-menopause, another friend that's in menopause here, and then my daughter that is just starting in their 20s,
yeah.
and then you that have had your babies. Is that who you're seeing all of this?
Yeah. I mean, that's actually a very good question. Originally, when I sort of embarked in what I envisioned the practice to be, I thought, oh, I would see a lot of sort of perimenopause. And, you know, that might be women in their 40s to 60s. And then as I really sort of delved into it and really started the journey and the practice started to evolve, I realized that it would be just as useful potentially for an 18-year-old battling hormonal issues as maybe a 70-year-old with vaginal dryness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to really sort of say, oh, it's only these 3 or 4 decades of life that are dealing with these issues is really quite limiting.
Right.
And in reality, you could be 16 and dealing with hormonal issues, or 76.
Right.
And dealing with hormonal issues. So really the goal is to sort of meet women where they are.
Right.
And figure out what they need and how we can help them achieve it.
How do you blend traditional versus functional? Because I've had a lot of physicians and nurse practitioners on the show that are functional,
yeah.
and I love it. I just love that we're getting to the root cause.
Absolutely.
So how are you blending that? Because you're traditionally
yes.
trained, right?
Yes.
So how does that work? Because you have an open mind, obviously.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think there's a lot of value in traditional medicine. Ultimately, I spent 12 years sort of
sure.
learning traditional medicine. And so I value it and I appreciate all that it has to offer. But I think what's so fascinating and interesting about functional medicine is that it's sort of this evolving field. And they're, you know, really looking at cutting edge technology and different, you know, how do we, rather than just here is a treatment for something, the goal is to really look at root cause and identify that and figure out how do we achieve the, you know, end goal for someone, but not just Band-Aid it, but actually fix it from the inside out.
Right.
And so I think my practice, really the goal is to sort of use traditional medicine when necessary. Certain things are going to unfortunately require prescription medication. It just is what it is. But sometimes prescription medication may not be the right thing for everybody. And so really, I think I sort of try to use both when appropriate. Some people, you know, are a little more inclined to say, I want to try to do this as holistically as possible. So for them, they may choose not to do prescription medication. So then we really look at other options, right, and other avenues of therapy. And so really, I try to blend the best of both worlds, I think would be the best way to put it. Sometimes there's value in traditional medicine. Sometimes there's value in functional medicine. But I think when you sort of get to take the best of both and blend them together, really the goal is to kind of, I think you're getting sort of the most optimal care possible.
Right, right. I struggle often, Dr. Patel, with that when, you know, there's reasons why there is pharma and there's prescriptive medicine, obviously. And I love when I have people that come on the show that still have an open mind. You know what I mean? Right? Is that fair to say?
100%.
Because I don't know. I'm just not going to let go either left or right. I just feel like, you know, with a trained professional like yourself, you will know when it's time.
Well, I think the advantage of sort of being rooted in traditional medicine is that, you know, whenever I look at a new study or I look at a new therapy, I'm always going to look at the data behind it, right? I'm always going to look at the facts first. And then I'm going to sort of look at the other parts of it. But I think that sort of allows me to incorporate treatments and newer therapies that I think are still rooted in science. In today's world, it's challenging because there's so many different things out there. You look at Instagram or anything else and there's 20, you know, you Google one thing and then suddenly your Instagram is talking to you with 40 different therapy options. And learning to navigate that and sort of figure out what is actually meaningful versus what is not meaningful, what is actually going to affect change versus what is just a money-making scheme. It's really challenging to navigate that world.
It is.
And so I think, you know, it's sort of my goal is to really help my clients navigate that.
Right.
And figure out what is really going to move the needle for them versus, you know, what is just maybe another way to spend money.
It is. And I love you say that because you're right. Social media is fabulous, but I'm like, oh my gosh, should I be doing that? When my doctor's, I'm on a supplement or hormone therapy for vaginal dryness. Mm-hmm. I've talked about this on my show multiple times. Everybody in the world knows I have a dry vagina. Okay. We're just going to say. So I'm saying that I get, when I see on all these social platforms, when I see this, I'm like, oh my gosh, should I do that too? Should I get this? And by the time I spend all that, I could have gone to you and if you point me in the right direction. With that said, what are the most common issues you and your practice in that year that you've opened, what are the most common issues you're seeing? Or is there one or is there a percentage?
Yeah, I mean, there's probably like 10. I mean, I would say the most common issues are fatigue, brain fog, a little bit of frustration with either inability to lose weight or feeling like you're gaining weight, even though, you know, women are often exercising and eating well, they're still not able to lose weight or they're still continuing to gain weight, even worse. Unfortunately, yes, vaginal dryness, decreased sex drive is a real issue. Maybe, you know, decreased sexual function in the sense that maybe things don't feel the way they used to.
Right.
Well, and then, of course, your lovely menopausal symptoms like hot flashes and night sweats, irritability, mood changes, even depression, anxiety. You know, a lot of these things are very much related to hormones.
Right, right.
So I would say, you know, that's just the root. That's just the surface.
Exactly.
But, there's often a constellation of symptoms that we do see.
Unlock style clarity like never before with the help of the SWB Agency, founded by stylist Bonnie Smith. They offer services both in person and online using their fully virtual platform. Here you learn to love your wardrobe again. Develop your style and shop curated pieces from your very own stylist. I've used the SWB Agency for years and I cannot describe how great it is to have fully styled outfits. Available and ready in a snap. For more information, visit www.theswbagency.com. Again, that's www.theswbagency.com. Link is also included in the show notes. I talk about this on the show, and I really do, and I joke about it, but I'm serious. I'm serious because women my age and younger say, I thought I was the only one. I didn't know. Nobody's talking about it. So, you know, talking about it and showing that there is a way to yes. get past this and have a fabulous life that, you know what yes. I mean? A very balanced life. So.
Well, and I personally, like in the course of my practice in the last year, have been, to your point, shocked at the number of times that women are like, I thought it was just me. I thought I was on this island alone. And I didn't realize that, you know, there are other people dealing with this, number one. And number two, that there are solutions and ways to actually improve this.
Wow.
Which, you know, in one way, I'm like, well, I'm happy we're here now and we can help this. But also is a little disheartening because that means that there are so many people that maybe don't have access to this type of healthcare or, you know, the ability to even access it.
Absolutely.
And they're just sort of suffering in silence.
Suffering in silence.
I think is sad.
I know it is. And the, I mean, we're here to say that it's not, yeah. it's not necessary for sure.
No,
not at all.
Ideally not.
For sure. Go see her, y'all. Okay. So I do have some questions, some okay. common questions that I do know the answer, but can you tell our audience what the difference between an OB and an OBGYN is?
Yes. That's actually a very
good
question.
Of course you can.
So OBGYN stands for obstetrics and gynecology. OBs, the obstetrics part, deliver babies. The GYN or gynecology part is the women's health part. So, you know, doing pap smears, doing hysterectomies, dealing with bleeding issues, hormone management, all of that. But in America, in some countries, it's actually split into two separate specialties. But in the U.S., it has been kind of joined into one specialty because there's a lot of overlap.
Right.
And so in the course of a four-year residency training program, you do both.
Right. So at my age, I should not be able to have children. Who knows? But
crazier things about
it. Oh, gosh. And no, boy, the factory shut on the other side. So I am do I go to a separate OB versus that doesn't deliver babies anymore? Or
I mean, so, you know, most OBGYN, like you could see a traditional OBGYN. My practice is now gynecology only. I no longer do OB at all. So I don't deliver babies anymore, which is very bittersweet.
Yeah.
But the reason that I made that change is that, you know, unfortunately, and, you know, a lot of women know that when you go to your OBGYN, a lot of times you're waiting. And, you know, oftentimes you might be waiting 45 minutes or an hour for your appointment because your OB is at the hospital delivering a baby. And
Yes. Schedule
is really hard to keep when babies come whenever they want.
Right.
So, by kind of being able to do a gynecology-only practice, my idea is that I can really run the practice on time. I'm not sort of running to the hospital in between patients, and I'm really able to focus on that. As well, I felt like it would really allow me more time to sort of make that my area of expertise. And when I went back and did functional medicine training, that is really the focus. You don't do any OB as a part of that.
Okay.
So it's really more about the gynecology and the hormone management and then really incorporating overall wellness, anti-aging, regenerative medicine, all of that.
Right.
So that's why I decided to sort of focus on gynecology because I felt like, unfortunately, it's really difficult to be the expert at everything.
Mm-hmm.
But if I was really going to spend time on women's health and really, you know, my goal was to optimize women's life and make them live happier and longer and better lives, that I really wanted to focus and hone in on that and really kind of become the expert in that space.
Wow. Tell us what regenerative medicine is.
So, you know, you hear all a lot of these terms, right? Anti-aging, regenerative medicine, functional medicine. These are all sort of buzzwords these days.
Right.
But ultimately, you know, I really think of all of these terms, whether you're regenerative medicine, anti-aging, the goal is to really, I don't like to say turn back time, but really increase life, increase longevity, but increase good years. So really allow people and women to live longer, but also better quality of life.
Okay.
So not just to lengthen
right.
life expectancy, but also to enhance quality of life.
Okay.
So that you're living longer, but also living better.
Right.
For longer.
How do you address in your practice anti-aging?
Yeah, so there's a lot of newer, and a lot of this lends itself to functional medicine, and this is where a lot of the research is still being done and maybe hasn't necessarily made it into textbooks. And this is where sometimes, you know, anti-aging, regenerative medicine, you'll see a little bit of a dichotomy between traditional medicine and functional medicine, not because functional medicine is necessarily wrong, it's just newer. And typically, you know, traditional medicine textbooks are usually 10 years behind the research because it just takes that long
wow.
for studies to be verified and, you know, for practices to sort of be passed down and to really make it into teachings.
Wow.
Whereas functional medicine, you know, they're a little bit more apt to sort of try newer therapies that have some research behind them. If that kind of makes sense.
Right. It does make sense. Because when I see when we were talking about anti-aging, my ears are perking up for sure.
But specifically in regards to anti-aging, there's a lot of newer therapies. There's IV therapies. NAD is which is kind of a building block of ATP, is sort of a buzzword that's out there that is really valuable for anti-aging. It can sort of, you know, improve quality of life, help with metabolic parameters.
What is that?
Improve energy. So it's, well, there's different, IV is probably the most effective, arguably, but it stands for nicotinamide adenine dinucleotide.
Whoa.
Yep. But it's basically a building block for ATP, which is cellular fuel.
Okay.
So when you, it's kind of a newer molecule that's sort of been discovered in the last few years as a really valuable anti-aging tool. And we're understanding more and more that NAD levels deplete with age.
Right.
So a 40-year-old probably has about half of the NAD levels of a 20-year-old, and a 60-year-old probably about a quarter. So we're understanding that if you replete depleted NAD levels, right, so you give someone back this NAD, a lot of times you can help a lot of these symptoms. It can help reduce fatigue. It can help improve metabolism. It can sometimes help with sleep quality. It can do a lot of different things if their body maybe wasn't running on all cylinders. So it's sort of filling the gas tank, so to speak.
And that's through IV therapy, right?
You can do it IV. There's also subcutaneous injections where a lot of times, like, you inject in the belly.
Right.
There's a few different forms.
Okay. Can I ask this question? And this is, know that I'm not a medical professional. I'm actually a chef. Okay. So is that a peptide?
So there, peptide therapy is a little different.
Okay.
NAD is technically not a peptide. It kind of is, but peptide therapy is its own space and world. And there is a lot of, you know, merit to peptide therapy. And I do use it some in my practice, but there is, I try to, you know, really only incorporate things that have been sort of vetted, and there's extensive data. And peptide therapy, I would say, is very much still an evolving field. So you kind of have to really sift through the data and figure out what is backed, what we know to be safe. And ultimately, you know, as a physician, I really do believe that my primary goal is to do no harm, right?
Mm-hmm.
I want to enhance women's lives, and I want them to feel better, and I want to help with that. But I also want to make sure that in that process, I'm not doing anything that's unsafe, or that we don't have a pretty strong idea is very safe.
Right.
And so that's where, you know, and that's part of that functional medicine piece and blending it with traditional, is that I also am a little bit cautious when I incorporate new therapies, because I want to make sure that we're not doing anything unsafe.
Right.
Because especially when it's a newer therapy and maybe we don't have 10 or 20 years of data, mm-hmm. we don't know what that long-term effect is going to be.
Wow.
And it may come about, you know, and 5 years later, we may say, oh, actually, it turns out that has negative effects that we didn't realize.
Sure.
So I like to be a little bit cautious when I do incorporate newer therapies.
Which is excellent. Excellent. So we just kind of talked about anti-aging and that realm and that population. Let's go to the other population that's taking birth control.
Okay.
Can you address your thoughts on birth control? Like, I know there's obviously a need for it.
Yeah.
What are your feelings on that? Because I say this for a reason, because I went through this and my daughter goes through this of, you're on a birth control, whatever said name birth control, but then the next month you get a generic, or you get this generic and that, and the symptoms are horrible. So can you, as a physician, talk to the people that are my demographics, which is 18 to 44, taking birth control or needing it? Can you give us your opinion?
Yeah. Well, I think the first part of that, when you said that, you know, sometimes you're getting different birth control substituted. I guess my first part to that would be that I think it's really frustrating that insurance companies dictate care, right? Because they are often dictating which birth control they're going to cover.
Mm-hmm.
So as a physician, you may order one birth control because you think that's the right one for them, and they will substitute in whatever they see fit. So I find that to be really frustrating and unfair to the patient.
Yeah.
But in terms of birth control, I mean, I think that it is something that people need access to. There's a lot of value in it. I think it's important to understand the risks and benefits of different birth controls. And I really think that it's important to sort of have a meaningful discussion with your physician about it, to understand, you know, which one might make the most sense for you. But I think there's a need. I think there's a, it's invaluable. Mm-hmm. And I think it can be very safe.
Right.
But I think it's just about understanding risk and benefit profile of the different forms to understand what might be the safest option for each person.
Right. Because there's different forms, mm-hmm. obviously.
Yeah.
IUD, there's different forms.
And pills and rings and all the things.
Shots.
Yes, and shots thing. And all the things.
And also, you know, I did have a physician on here who was saying you have to be compliant and take it.
Yeah. It only works if you take it.
It always works if you do it right, right?
Yeah. Pretty effective if you take it.
Exactly. So that's interesting because I do have a lot of you know, younger women that are just, and they hear things.
Yes.
And what they're hearing it is on TikTok or it's on.
Right. You know, there's all these things that, oh, hormones are bad for you, or it increases your risk of breast cancer, or increases your risk of colon cancer, all these different things. And I think that's where it's really difficult sometimes to navigate through the facts.
Right.
Versus, you know, hearsay. And, you know, sometimes that it's difficult. That's a hard thing to navigate. But I think the reality is we're always learning more. Mm-hmm. But I would say over the last 30 years, we've learned a lot about hormones. Mm-hmm. And we really understand more that those risks are probably not what we once thought them to be.
Right.
And, you know, when dosed appropriately and taken appropriately, that those risks are very low, if any at all.
Right.
But it really is about sort of understanding the risks and the benefits and what that means for each person.
Yes, pros and cons. I take bioidentical hormones, and I have probably since I was 40, so we're pushing 19 years now. And, you know, that if they're diagnosed and they're watched and monitored, mm-hmm. which you, mm-hmm. we're going to talk about your practice, I'm good. You know what I mean? Like, I'm really good. But I do have, you know, I'm on an open platform that people are like, you're going to get cancer. You're going to do this. You're going to, I'm like, oh, it just, you know, and I'm not in a position to say,
right.
You know, I'm not a professional, but, you know, do the research or, you know what I'm saying?
Well, and there's a lot of naysayers out there, right?
Oh.
And there are people that are quick to jump on a bandwagon either way that don't really understand the research. And I think it's difficult because hormone therapy in general is very nuanced. And it's easy to sort of make a blanket statement that estrogen is bad or progesterone is bad or it increases your risk of breast cancer. But the reality is there might be 10 different forms, and maybe one form might potentially increase the risk, but that might not be the form that we recommend using or that we even use at all anymore. But I think that's where sometimes hormone therapy and things like that can sort of get a bad rap. Because, you know, for instance, when I trained more than 15 years ago, we were sort of taught that hormone therapy is not great. And you really want to only use the smallest dose for the shortest period of time, and that it's really a means to an end. But now, as 20 more years have gone by, we've really understood that that's not the case at all. And actually, hormone therapy probably decreases all-cause mortality, which means that women will probably die less from all the different causes of death.
Right.
And that it actually prolongs life expectancy. It prolongs good quality of life. It decreases heart disease when started at the appropriate time. May even reduce the risk of dementia. We definitely know it reduces the risk of osteoporosis and increases bone health. So there's a lot of really, really positive effects. But I think it's important, and really that's where people sometimes don't understand the benefits versus the risks.
I mean, I love everything you're saying. I mean, this is such a gift to the listeners and viewers of this, because there is a lot of naysayers and there's a lot of bandwagons that are being jumped on. And, you know, with your practice, I'm assuming that one size does not fit all.
100%.
You know, I mean, everyone in this room, four women in this room, we are all different. So you do look at that way, and you have the time to do that.
Well, and yes, I think it really is about time. And I think it's about time for a lot of providers in reality. It's not that in my old practice, when I had 10 or 15 minutes, it's not that I didn't want to. I just simply didn't have the time because insurance is only willing to reimburse a certain amount, or will say this dictates the amount of time you can spend with the patient. And so now, because I have more time, it really allows me, you know, it allows time for adequate patient education to really walk through the risks and benefits, really understand their goals, and then sort of cater and create a customized plan to sort of help them achieve those goals.
Right.
But unfortunately, all of that takes time.
It takes time. It takes time. And it's not just sitting there writing a prescription. It is food and diet and moving and hormones and all the things that you would be testing.
Yes.
Speaking of testing, tell us when a person, a woman, makes an appointment at Feminology MD. Tell us about your practice. Like, what is the experience going to be? Are you the only provider there? What are you? Tell us about this. What to expect?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So our tagline is redefining women's health, because my goal when I started the practice was really to sort of create a different experience where women wanted to come see me instead of sort of dreading going to the OBGYN, thinking, oh, I'm going to have to wait an hour and then I'm only going to see the doctor for 10 minutes. And then, you know, a lot of complaints I'd often hear is like, or even from friends, right? When I was soliciting feedback and really understanding how I wanted to sort of create this new practice, would, you know, they'd say, oh, I wait an hour to see them. And then, you know, they have 10 minutes and I don't even get to make it through half my questions, or it's really curt responses. And it's not intended to be, you know, they're doing the best they can, but they're limited by time. And so when I really created the practice, my goal was to sort of make a place for women that was a safe space where they wanted to go and they felt like they had time to get their questions answered. And they, you know, if they didn't make it to a question that day, they felt like their provider was accessible. They can reach back out to me. They can text me. They can call my office. And we can really address all of those questions, and that they feel like they're a part of their care plan.
Right.
I really wanted to sort of empower women and make them feel like they are the driver of their healthcare, as they should be.
Right.
Not that I'm saying you need to do this, but instead, this is what I would suggest. Here's why. But you tell me what your goals are and let's see how we can get there.
Advocate.
And so it's a team effort.
Right.
But to your question, it's really designed for women. It's designed to sort of be a comprehensive women's health center. So obviously we can deal with the gynecology. We can deal with a lot of the primary care needs as well. And then incorporating that functional medicine and really overall wellness. And then, of course, incorporating a lot of this, you know, issues that we deal with as we age, like incontinence, you know, bladder issues, vaginal dryness, decreased sex drive, you know, a lot of those things, pelvic floor physical therapy. And so we do have sort of a comprehensive set of treatments to be able to address a lot of those different issues. Because my goal really in creating my practice was to make it convenient for women. I wanted to really be able to create a one-stop shop where I wasn't having to refer them to six different places for their goals,
right,
but at least try to achieve as many as possible under one roof that I at least would be able to competently provide.
Right, right. So you make an appointment with you and it's a consult?
Or? Yeah, so typically what we'll do is we'll make a new patient consult, which is scheduled for 50 minutes. It always ends up longer than that because I endeavor to run on time, but apparently, you know, it turns out an hour is not even enough
right.
time. But usually we'll sort of walk through what their different symptoms are, what their goals are, what they're currently taking, if they're on any supplements, or sort of what their medical history has looked like thus far, decide what labs or other functional testing might be appropriate, and then go ahead and do all of that day.
Wow.
And then they'll usually follow up about a week or two later for an additional 50-minute appointment, which is about an hour, to go over all that. And really the goal is that they leave that second appointment with a comprehensive plan in place for what we're doing. Follow-ups will just be sort of incrementally as needed. My goal is to really try to get as much done within those two visits and then just sort of have individuals follow up as needed. It might be 3-4 months later for a quick 15-minute visit, or potentially if they need labs, we'll schedule those and maybe we'll schedule a quick phone call. But really the goal is to make it as convenient as possible for women, because everybody's busy.
Everybody's busy.
And we're on the go and everybody's trying to do too much these days.
Right.
So the goal is to really be able to sort of incorporate their overall health care and wellness into their busy life.
Right. So with someone like myself, if I were your patient, would I still need to see an OB-GYN for pap smears and annual exams? So you work hand in hand. If someone comes in and doesn't have an OB-GYN,
yep,
you know what I mean? You know, referrals, you can help with that.
So the answer to your question is no, you don't still have to see an OB-GYN.
Okay.
At a lot of our new patient consults or the follow-up, you know, someone will say, oh, I need to knock out my pap smear and mammogram. Great. Let's just do that as part of the visit. There's really no reason for an extra charge, and all of that can be built through insurance.
You offer that?
Yes.
Ah.
It's part of our, you know, the goal is to really not make someone have to see another OBGYN. However, I have lots of patients that have OBGYNs,
sure,
right, that they've been seeing for 20 years, and they delivered their babies, and they feel that connection, and they love seeing them once a year.
Yeah.
But, you know, it might be a little bit more of a rushed visit. They may not really have the time to delve into all of the hormone questions they have, all of the anti-aging, all of the overall health issues that they want to get into. So they may come to see me for that, but then they may see their OB still once a year.
Wow.
And I actually have a lot of OBGYNs that refer to me for the other piece of things because they really don't have time to get into it in their practice.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I really have been enjoying is having the time to sort of integrate care with other providers and really, you know, for my clients to be able to sort of talk to their other providers, right? Talk to their primary care doctor, whether they have a concierge medicine doctor or maybe they have an orthopedic issue, is really having the time to sort of reach out and actually having phone conversations so that we can sort of optimize care, not just on my end, but from the whole care team for that individual. Yes. So that we really enhance their outcome.
Yeah.
And so they feel better ultimately.
Because I feel like sometimes too that like your whole care team is not always talking.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Like,
I didn't know you were taking the statin, or I didn't know you were, you know what I'm saying?
100%. And it's unfortunate because medicine has become disconnected. There's become this, oh, you know, your primary care, unfortunately, because, you know, limits of the healthcare system has to refer to a cardiologist, they have to refer to the allergist, they have to refer you to the dermatologist. And then all of those providers don't necessarily have a great platform to communicate with each other. And it's really time consuming, it's hard to get them on the phone. But, you know, in my current practice, because I have more time to spend with patients, it's easier for me to sort of take that time to pick up the phone and have those conversations and really figure out, you know, what the different providers are doing and how do we sort of work together to enhance, you know, the patient's outcome.
How exciting for you.
So, and I've actually loved that.
How exciting at this point in your career you can do this, right? I mean,
I've been loving it.
I'm so excited for you and for all of us that have the opportunity to see you. So one last question for everyone. We've talked about this a little bit in the show today, but how do you see in the next decade OB-GYN, functional medicine, blending, evolving? Like, what change do you see on the horizon?
I hope that we, you know, all physicians and providers really start to incorporate functional medicine more and more into their traditional training, because I don't think that one school of thought is completely 100% right. I think there's merit in a lot, you know, I think there's integrative medicine, right, which is kind of the idea of integrating traditional and functional medicine, then you have more functional medicine that leans a certain direction, and then you have more traditional medicine. And so I hope it goes this direction, is that all providers start to sort of want to incorporate all of that into their treatment of patients and that they don't get tied to any one way.
Right.
Because I think when you keep an open mind and you want to learn about new therapies, but also, you know, was that old Girl Scouts slogan, you know, make new friends, but keep the old.
Right.
Right. So, you know, the old studies and literature and data is not meaningless. There's a lot of value in it. But we also want to incorporate the new because that's how we're really going to stay cutting edge. And that's how we're going to continue to evolve and continue to be able to take care of individuals as well as we can.
Well, you are absolutely amazing. I'm so happy for you. I'm so happy for the women that will eventually see you and the ones that are seeing you now. I mean, I'm just so excited.
Thank you so much for having me. Yes. This was so much fun.
Good. We want you to come to Fort Worth. How about that? That's your next one. We'll talk about that.
We're over there.
Well, it is so nice to meet
you. Thank you so much.
How can we find you?
Yeah, so we're located in Preston Center in Dallas, pretty much Preston and Northwest Highway. Or you can find that our website is feminologymd.com or feminologymd on Instagram.
Well, thank you so much. It's a pleasure meeting you. Thanks for all you do.
Thank you.
Y'all, thank you so much for following along and listening today. Wow. What a show today for women and women's health and wellness. And I'm just so proud to bring these fabulous women and men to you all the time. It's just great. It makes my heart happy. And it's the reason I'm here. So everyone, thank you again. You know what I say every week. Keep being fabulous.